Hi, I'm Guy.
And I'm Alex.
What can I get you two?
Can I get a can of Beavertown neck oil?
And I'll take a bottle of Peroni Grand Reserva double malt.
You know, it's almost time at the bar.
And this is the last call...
This podcast.
Yes, we're back for episode 3 of series 2. And as always, we've got a ton of hilarious, interesting and poignant things on the agenda, as well as some tales from behind the bar. We will also be playing a brand new game called Booze or Ruse.
But before all that, it's time for the booze headlines.
This week's headlines from the world of alcohol. In addition to the watermelon vodka we mentioned in the last episode, Pernod Ricard have also announced a watermelon version of Malibu rum liqueur, which will be available to buy this year.
In the world of beer, BrewDog have released a new beer to celebrate their B Corp status as part of a global community of businesses focused on social and environmental practices. The new beer is a 5% Pilsner and will be available online soon.
Speaking of beer, a New York resident has released an emotional support beer in collaboration with Woodstock Brewery in response to a sign that prohibits drinking on public transport without written permission. The man was able to register the beer as an emotional support animal, and New York residents can purchase it now from the Woodstock Brewing website.
And finally, scientists have found that drinking 6 glasses of wine a week can be linked to lower risk cataracts following a review of data from nearly 500,000 people, making it the largest study of its kind. So for better vision, be sure to drink plenty of wine throughout the week.
You're listening to The Last Call Podcast, and those were the booze headlines. Well, there we go. Now, you weren't a fan of watermelon vodka. How do you feel about watermelon Malibu?
No.
That's just a hard no.
Don't even like Malibu.
There's a... They do a strawberry and they do a pineapple version, I think.
I'd probably like the strawberry one. But Malibu rum, I always expect to come out as cream, because it's in that kind of bottle.
Yeah, like a cream liqueur.
I think for a long time I thought it was cream.
I mean, it's got a creamy taste. Well, that's that topic exhausted.
I'm more interested about this guy who
guy in New York.
Who registered his beer as an emotional support animal.
Oh, this is such a great story. This is a guy from Brooklyn. His name is Floyd Hayes. And he was on the bus in New York. And he saw that there was a sign that said it was illegal to have alcohol on board without written permission. So he then went and registered a pint of beer as an emotional support animal with the USA Service dog registration. And apparently, from what I can read, got away with that. And then a brewery has helped him brew it.
That's incredible. So, did he didn't like lie on the form?
I'm guessing not. I feel like he's going to have to tell them it's a pint of beer. Like actual beer. But he certainly got away with it, and now it's brewed. It is such a huge amount of effort if you want to drink on the bus. That is such a huge amount of effort.
That's commitment to the cause as well, really. You've got to be a big beer lover to go that far.
Hey, good on him.
Yeah. I mean, instead of just waiting.
just waiting until you get off the bus.
No, I need to drink this immediately.
He just saw the sign and was like, you can't tell me what to do.
I'm going to go through something that I imagine takes more than a day. I imagine it's quite a long process. I'd love it if he did it all like on the bus journey. Just did it on the bus, on the phone. He's like, I've got 15 minutes left the journey. I can now.
Nobody's going to buy it. Like, people will buy the beer, but nobody's going to buy the story if you're sat on the bus with your can of emotional support beer.
Yeah.
And they go, sorry, you can't drink on the bus. And you go, well, I've actually registered this with the U.S. Service Dogs Administration, and it is my emotional support beer, and I'm perfectly allowed to have it. They'll probably go, step off the bus, please.
That begs the question, why stop there? Why not? Can we have emotional support?
assault rifles.
Yeah. Emotional support.
This is my emotional support dirty bomb.
It's a registered emotional support animal, and I must have it. It's incredible. Emotional support drugs. So you can't smoke weed on this bus. Well, it's my emotional support doobie.
I've gone through the proper channels.
And I have a legal right to smoke this weed on this bus.
Again, get off the bus, please.
Can we? Do you think we could claim things? Do you think I could register someone else's house as an emotional support house and then they have to leave?
Well, let's look into it. Okay, so it's different in the UK. We have the Emotional Support Animals UK Registry, also known as the ESA.org.UK. Register your animal. Ah, so you need a medical assessment letter normally to register an emotional support animal. However, the website says medical letter not required when registering at this moment because there's a limited access to medical professionals.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Presumably because of the pandemic. Yeah. So if you were ever going to register a pint as an emotional support animal...
Now's the time.
Only for dogs and cats. To register other animals, go here.
Yep.
Don't mind if I do.
I'd be amazed if we could register a can of Guinness.
Right, so what? As far as I can see, it's just a form. You put type of animal, your name, your email, your phone, confirm your email, and then a message in which you presumably type, I'm trying to register a can of Guinness as an emotional support animal, and go for it. Is this the kind of thing we'll get in trouble for? And it's £50, apparently. So I tell you what, we'll appeal to the listeners. If anyone would like to donate £50 to the Last Call podcast, we will see what happens when you register a can of Guinness as an emotional support animal. And if anyone works for the ESA.org.UK and is listening, get in touch and tell us if you'd let it fly, you know? I notice it's non-refundable, but you know, everybody hates their job every now and then. If you're sat processing these forms and one comes across pint of beer,
you think,
well, everybody's got a stupid emotional support animal for everything.
I don't think you can call them stupid emotional support animals.
No, I'm saying dogs and cats, I understand how that... I get that, but you hear about people with, like, fucking parakeets and stuff. It's like, you are... Whatever's wrong with you, a parakeet is not going to help. You need more medical attention. No doctor prescribes a parakeet. Yeah. You don't go in and sit and talk about being anxious or depressed or one of the many other mental health issues that are out there at the moment, and a doctor turns around and goes, right, well, I'm going to get you a parakeet.
Yeah.
And I think we'll turn this whole situation around.
Yeah. I've seen this before. It's an easy fix. That's awesome. Great. What is it? It's a parrot. What? Yeah. It's a parrot. They're great. They're great.
Give you a letter, sit on your shoulder.
Yeah. They're awesome. Here's a prescription.
You talk about how bad your life is. Parrot repeats it back to you. You're bombed.
Yeah.
That's the thing about parrot, you automatically have stuff in common. You come home and go, oh, I had a shit day. And the parrot goes, I had a shit day. And you're like, yes, see, it wasn't just me.
Jesus Christ. But I was thinking, if we did get a beer registered as emotional support animal, when are we ever... So can't you drink pretty much anywhere in the UK?
I'm not entirely sure. I know you can drink on a train.
Yes.
Which is great.
You can drink. You can drink on a bus. I don't know who the fuck's going to stop you if you're not supposed to drink on a bus. You know, this one guy driving the bus isn't gonna stop you.
Too much shit happen on buses
mm.
for me to assume people give a shit about you having a can. Drinking on a train is great if you are for the gentleman traveller who enjoys a beer or two and some scenery. Not for a group of dickheads getting absolutely smashed because it's Dazza's stag.
Yeah, or a bunch of middle-aged women going down to London for the weekend to see a show.
Oh, middle-aged women on trains? Control yourselves. Get your shit together. I'm dead serious about this. Same goes for fucking lads in skinny jeans.
Yeah,
Just come on, guys.
Middle-aged men and women on trains.
Come on, guys.
Just be quiet. Just calm it down. Just be quiet.
I don't know what it is about men when they hit kind of like late 30s, where they just suddenly, they feel the need to be proper loud, rub the top of their mates' heads all the time. They go out and buy the fucking Peaky Blinders cap.
Bathe themselves in cologne to a point where they're turning people blind. The white Hugo Boss polos with the collar popped.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no one cares.
We get it. Your life sucks. Your wife doesn't want to bang you anymore. Like, we understand, okay? You don't need to rub
no
my
cares.
Face. It's not my fault that your existence is miserable.
You know, we're all just trying to get to the same destination on this train. Let's just get there together, you know?
Also, slight change of topic, but once you hit 25, you stop drinking Jaeger bombs. That should be the fucking law. You hit 25, you're done. You've done your time on Jaeger
bombs.
Can't
drink them now. I think they're horrible.
Honestly, I think everyone with a brain goes off Jaeger bombs around 22, and then they have a few years of kind of peer pressure where they're hanging out with people who still drink Jaeger bombs. But once you hit 25, just give it up. Give it up. What are you doing? Really, what are you doing?
Completely agree. No one cares that you went to the pub in the train station before getting on the train.
Yeah, it's fucking hilarious. It's a train journey, sir. Go to the Pumpkin Cafe, get yourself a sandwich.
Yes.
Sit down and do the crossword like everybody else. You're old!
Have you ever seen people who are on first dates in a train station pub?
I don't know. I feel like if I was going on a first date with someone and I was like, oh, meet us at the Railway Tavern.
Yeah.
Because they're all called the Railway Tavern.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think that's a good date place because it's the atmosphere of a Spoons, but you have the British Transport Police outside as well.
I've seen people on first dates at a pub because it's convenient, isn't it? Well, meet me at the train station, then, well, I guess this is good. That, and the people that do that aren't risk takers, and that should be a big fucking warning sign straight away. If you turn up on a date, and whoever you've met goes, should we just go to this pub in the train station? Because it's here? Not for you. They're scared of the unknown.
They're a person of convenience. Why do they want to be so close to the train station?
Yeah.
Are they planning a swift exit?
What's that about? You should be like, I'm actually thinking we go out of the train station and go to a Wetherspoons, which is exactly the same.
Well, this brings me on to some first date advice that I once heard, that I think's a little bit genius. A friend of mine always said, first dates, go for tapas. Because I see you looking confused. You want to hear the logic?
Yes.
So you take someone out for tapas. First of all tapas places kind of have a wine bar type vibe anyway.
Okay.
But you get your drinks.
Yep.
And then you can order two or three little tapas plates. And if the date's not going very well, you can finish the tapas plates, wrap it up, and get out of there. Whereas if the date's going well, that's when you can order a few more tapas plates, a few more glasses of wine. Tapas place, the meal can be as big or as small as you want it to be. Whereas if you go out for dinner somewhere, you might be sat there over the starters like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah, you're locked in.
This person is doing my head in and I've ordered I've got my main coming and she was looking at the souffle so we could be here for another hour and a half. Whereas tapas, if you're not clicking, you could literally order a couple of glasses of wine, some olives, some bread. And if you're not clicking,
yeah,
you can wrap it up. But if you are clicking, you can be like, hey, why don't we try the spicy meatballs? Why don't we get some prosciutto?
imagine going on a date with someone and all they order is olive bread and go, oh, I'm
stuffed. Should we get the bill? I think if you're on, I haven't been on a first date in fucking ages, but I think if you're on a first date, you kind of have to be honest, especially if it's not with someone you know. In this age of just meeting random people through Tinder or online and just meeting them,
yeah.
you got to shoot them straight. And if in the first 10 minutes, you can't be afraid to be like, look, I don't think we're clicking. You don't look anything like your fucking picture, for starters. But I don't think we're clicking. Let's just call it here. And also, the main reason I can't go on first dates anymore is because I'm in a relationship, which is the obvious reason. But the other reason is because I can't have someone see me eat.
What?
I don't think that's a... I don't know what a good first date is, because I don't think... If I was single and I was going on a first date, me eating, I can't see any way that anyone would be like, yeah, this is the guy I want to be with. I eat hungry, you know? I don't think I can bring myself to sit in a restaurant and take tiny little mouthfuls of food at the risk of looking polite. I think once they see me wing back a fucking bowl of pasta.
I have no idea what to say to that.
I think a good first date might be... Here's the problem. On paper, a good first date would be to go to the movies and then for drinks.
No.
Because immediately you've got something to talk about once you sit down for drinks. The problem is you don't want to meet someone and be like, hi, yeah, no, I'm Alex. I thought we could go and sit in a dark room for 3 hours and talk to each other.
That's... Would it make more sense to go for drinks first?
Tell you what you could do. You could do a couple of little pre-drinks as like a tester, get to know each other, and then go and see a movie as like a thinking period for both of you. You don't say it. You're like, let's go see a movie. And both of you can sit there and be like, is this what I want? I don't know. He said that weird thing. She said this. I'm not sure. Who the fuck orders Malibu and Coke?
And then
when the movie finishes, you can be like, well, it's really nice hanging out with you.
Yeah, you both chat and you go, what do you think of the movie? And none of you even watched it because you were too busy thinking about,
I'm making a mistake. The walls are closing in.
on whether or not this is the right move.
I know I wasn't ready for this.
Movies for first date, I've never been. That's not maybe, one for me.
Maybe that's a second date one.
I think movies is second date. Bowling is the worst first date. And I've voiced this opinion a lot, many times. And I always receive... some pushback, but I think it's stupid.
I'm automatically tempted to push back because that bowling seems all right. It seems like it's one of those things that's quirky enough to trick a girl into thinking you're fun.
No, how?
I'm not fun, but I would definitely be like, hey, why don't we go bowling? And they'd be like, oh my god, he goes bowling? That's so quirky.
Oh
he's so fun. Then you lock him into a relationship and then they're like, oh my god, he is not fun at all.
Okay, so you think use bowling as some kind of trap. Nice. I just don't get it. You sit there. What the fuck do you talk about? Because you're up and down. It's stupid. And then you go bowling and you see people on dates bowling. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'm sat there. I'm watching them like, you're not talking to each other.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Good shot. Wow, it's really good.
Nice. Maybe try a little bit harder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that was way better. Yeah, I can see why that wouldn't
work. Bowling, bowling alleys aren't
romantic at all.
No.
They're brightly lit and full of kids.
Yeah, brightly lit. Smells of grease. Oh, should we order some food? Yeah.
No!
Here's some cholesterol on bread and some overpriced beers. If someone asked me, should I, if not that anybody, any, not that anybody,
what the fuck is going on with you?
Oh my god, man. I'm having a, not that anybody ever would. Not that anybody ever would ask me for dating advice, But if they said, should I take someone bowling, I'd be like, absolutely not.
Yeah, probably not the best. I mean, if you've been with someone a while, if you're in a relationship, then yeah, go bowling by all means. Because, you know, gets you out of the house. Something different.
Paintball. Now, there's a good first date.
But, well, it's fun.
Just let them fucking... Just proper. Also, that's you're just getting down. You're getting primal there.
Just shoot in the face.
Yeah, let them know what you're all about.
Yeah, I rented this paintball thing for us. I call blue team.
1v1. Let's go.
You know what?
No, paintball's a bad idea as well.
I was gonna say it might be fun. Maybe not paint. Maybe laser tag because there's less pain. You don't want to go on a first date and accidentally take someone's fucking eye out. Oh, Linda, how was your first date with that guy? Oh, yeah, well, it was great. And then he shot me in the eye with a paint pellet and we spent the rest of the night at the hospital.
and the doctor prescribed me a parrot. I don't know what...
So now I got this.
No. I've got to wear an eye patch and I've got a parrot. No, we're suggesting very sort of 15-year-old dates as well. Paintball,
yeah, true.
Laser tag.
There's got to be something better to wow a girl, but you don't want to try too hard.
Or wow a man.
Or wow a man, of course, yeah. Or wow anything otherwise.
Mm.
You know.
Just to wow another human being.
But you don't want it. Well, by that, I don't mean you arrange a flash mob in the Pret.
Should we go for coffee?
What's happening? I arranged this flash mob for you. They're going to spell out your name.
Oh, God. Perfect first date.
You don't want to go to, you know, a good second or third date would be the come over and I'll cook type thing. But that, there's ulterior motives there.
Come over on the second, third date.
Hey, I move fast.
I eat fast and I move fast.
I move fast.
Inhale your meal. Want to come back to mine?
I thought we could maybe have a few more drinks first. Sure.
Ready?
Get a taxi, or you want to walk?
Oh God, no, I don't know. You see, people do
escape
first...
room.
No, no.
I thought we could be locked in a room together.
Mm. That would just be... Actually, do you know what? I don't think that would be a bad idea.
All depends on what kind of person you are, what kind of person they are.
It's a make or break, really. You either work... That's a good way of seeing if you work well together.
True. But what if... What if they're a moron and the escape room is too hard? I know you get out eventually, otherwise there'd be morons locked in escape rooms all over the country. But what if you get stuck in there? What if immediately she's doing your head in? And she's just barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
I've never done an escape room, but she's there like, why don't we... Oh, the pattern's on the bricks. Maybe if we add up all the different specs on the bricks, that'll lead us to her. And you're like, no, I don't think that's...
No, I'm done. Yeah.
Like, it goes from, hey, I thought we could do an escape room on our first date, to, Sharon, seriously, fucking help me look for this.
I think there's a door behind here. Please! Please help me find this key.
How many times are we going to have the bookshelf discussion? There's nothing there!
I fifth wheeled on a double date in an escape room.
Oh, you've done an escape room? I've never done one.
I've done two.
Oh. Wow. How was it?
They were good. The one when I fifth wheeled wasn't great. Because they were on dates, they weren't dating. So I don't really know why I was there. But...
Yeah, I was going to say, what the fuck were you doing there?
So, but I was there.
How nervous were they that they were like, oh, should we invite Guy along as a bit of comedy fodder?
Yeah. So, but that was all, it was all right. I was no help. It was one of those escape rooms where you could take a time penalty if you couldn't figure it out. You pressed it and it sort of gave the answer. But
it gives you a hint, okay.
But it took a time penalty. So I remember clicking that a lot. I remember being in charge of the iPad that did it. I just would press it without people knowing because I was just getting a bit bored. But I'd press it and then claim like I'd worked out the answer.
Ah.
And then no one could work out they were like, oh, we must have taken longer than we thought, but they didn't know I was pressing the thing. So I came off really smart in that.
I suppose that's the best way to do it. Cheat.
Yeah.
Cheated at an escape room.
But yeah, that was a weird escape room. It had a weird, it was like a murder thing, and then went down into a dungeon.
You what?
There was, you were...
It was a murder room.
Yeah, you were detectives, and then...
Right.
It's all very confusing.
There's a fundamental flaw with escape rooms for me, and it's part of the reason that I've never done it, is that there's, to get maximum enjoyment out of an escape room, I think there has to be a role-playing element.
You want to commit?
No, I'm the opposite. I don't want to commit.
Oh.
So they can lose all that stuff, because I'm not going to walk around like, ah, another day on a case, another broad found murdered. I'm never going to do that. So they can drop all that and just be like, right, you're in the room, the clues are in the room. I don't need the story, if that makes sense. Whereas they're all themed now, it's all...
But that's the whole point. Because you immerse yourself into it. You're never going to figure out, you know, the murderer's motives and where he hid the key or the body if you're not, you know, if you're not a detective. You know, you need a whole backstory.
I think of nothing worse than doing an escape room, honestly. Other than maybe live action role playing. But that's because I just don't have the type. People who do it, nothing but respect for the commitment to that. Well, congratulations. I imagine if you can bring yourself to do that, to commit to it like that, it must be amazing fun. But I can never see myself, especially the medieval fantasy stuff. You want to go and recreate the Battle of Gettysburg, knock yourself out. But the fantasy medieval stuff, where they run around in the fields with these tricked out costumes. I can't. If someone said, oh, we're going to go and do that this weekend, do you want to come along or blow your brains out? I'd blow my brains out.
So what about those murder mystery nights? Have you seen them where everybody...
The dinner party.
Dinner parties, everybody gets dressed up and they've all got a character. I'd do that.
It's the character that gets me. Because you have to stay in character the whole meal. From what I understand is you're given a like a file that explains your character, their motives, whether you're the murderer or not or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have to stay in character the whole meal. The whole meal, starters, mains, and desserts. If there was an unwritten rule, if it was a thing that you do your character for a bit, and then you can just enjoy your fucking meal, and then jump back into it, that'd be great. But I don't want to be stuck as, you know, Baron Dickhard, sat at the table trying to enjoy my risotto while everyone's asking me stupid questions. So Baron
Dickhard.
So Baron Dickhard, where is the best elephant hunting this year? Seriously, Greg, I'm just trying to fucking eat, man. Come on, I've told you everything in the file.
Let's pick.
Please,
yeah. Let's pick.
Please, can we have? Can I have 5 seconds?
Let's pick
please.
This up at Coffees. If it was your night, you could.
That sounds like a great question for after dessert, Greg.
If it was your night, you could say that. You could be like, everybody's in character.
Yeah.
Unless we're eating.
Yeah, I imagine it's very... Here's the thing. You add alcohol to any of these situations, I'm in, but I will ruin it for other people unintentionally.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this recently. This is very loosely linked. But you know how, like, celebrities go into rehab for alcohol and stuff? Mm-hmm. I can kind of understand it, because everything is enhanced with alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's 10 times more fun.
Literally, there are certain... Almost everything is better if you're drunk, other than maybe Formula One and brain surgery, you know? everything is more fun to do after a few beers. 100%.
Yeah.
Alcohol would definitely make any of those situations better, but alcohol does also make people do stupid things. And speaking of that, perhaps it's time for some tales from behind the bar. Do you have a segue this week?
Yes, I do.
You do? Oh, God. All right, go on then.
I've got to put up a painting behind the bar. It's time to hammer a nail behind the bar or hammer some nails behind the bar. I'll do that again because that's good. I've got to put up a painting behind the bar. I've got to hammer some nails behind the bar.
All right. I'm going to stop asking you to do segues, I think. Unless people enjoy them. Maybe I'll ask on Twitter. So I've got three tales from behind the bar this week. A couple of slightly longer ones as well, so more to unpack. Oh, and look at this. Look at this. First one comes in from Anonymous. I had a first date couple walk in for dinner at the bar.
Here we go.
There we go. Usually, when I saw a date going sideways or a conversation going stale, I'd politely chime in and help get them talking again and try to get them laughing and enjoying themselves.
No.
You're not the guy. If the date's bombing, it's bombing for reasons that they need to make themselves aware.
It's not your responsibility, Cupid.
Yeah. That's if two people on a first date aren't clicking, that's because there's something fundamentally wrong. Don't insert yourself into that situation and try and make it work.
You've got to let it run its course.
Then 5 years down the line, they're screaming and shouting. The kid's crying in the other room. He's walking out for a pack of cigarettes and never coming back. And it's all your fault. This time, however, the guy was a total dickhead and was insufferable, kept talking over his date, interrupting her, and non-stop bragging.
Oh, here we go.
We got Billy Big Balls. Oh boy, here we go. He ordered a cocktail that gets a Thai chili garnish, and those shits are fucking hot and can vary quite wildly in heat. This guy asked me if the pepper is edible. I say technically it is, but they're really hot and I don't advise you eat it.
Okay.
He apparently took that as a challenge and made a comment about me not being man enough to handle spicy food.
Oh.
Well, we all know what it is.
I like what this guy's doing, but don't come in from the fucking butthurt angle. Don't be like, he said I'm a pussy. You know. he said I'm a pussy, so I made him eat a hot chili. Just be like, I just fucking mess with this guy. Anyway, so.
And also, right. This is something men everywhere need to understand. Everybody has a spice threshold, right?
Mm.
Whatever yours is, it's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. There's certain things that I eat that are so spicy, my mouth is on fire, and then at that point I'm like, oh my fucking God. But something I see a lot is men bright red, sweating, going, yeah, it's not really that hot.
Yeah.
Liking spicy food doesn't.
I need this story to end in this guy shitting himself.
All right. So jumping back in, blah blah blah. Made a comment about me not being man enough. Da, 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 da. This motherfucker bit the whole pepper off at the stem, chewed it. The whole pepper. Oh, this, and immediately turned red. Turned as red as a stop sign.
This has to be a poo story.
He swallows it, and I could tell he was truly regretting his decision. He starts coughing, his eyes are watering, he's sweating like shit. The woman looks at me, then at him, and asks for her portion of the bill. Oh,
oh no.
He insists on paying, and as she gets up to leave, he tries talking her into going to another bar, not really recovered from eating the pepper. He tipped horribly and then followed her out.
I've kind of got to hand it to the guy that ate the pepper. You know, he's like, he's dying.
No, stick around.
Yeah. I'll get it.
Don't worry.
It's on me.
What kind of gentleman would I be if I didn't get the bill? You guys have milk?
You want to go somewhere else after this?
I'm feeling ice cream.
Oh God!
The other thing is, he had a point. He had an opportunity to turn that date around completely and be like, "Oh my God, he was right. That's so spicy."
Yeah.
Try and make a bit of a joke, get a laugh, but no, just powered through. Powered through.
Powered through.
Ah, he fucked himself there.
I like that story. He definitely shit himself. I'm convinced.
Oh dear. All right. Our next. Our next story is nice and short. It comes in from Moist Bum.
Ah, this is the guy that ate the chili.
Nice and short. It said, some guy got really, really drunk and thought they were a kangaroo. He tried to get into another dude's hoodie pocket. He got a swift beating and was thrown out.
You can't argue with that, can you?
No. If someone tried to get... I'm not saying I'd beat the shit out of someone if they tried to get in my hoodie pocket without a formal conversation first. But I would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Guys bouncing around the bar. I'm a kangaroo. If you're the pouch. If you're the kangaroo, surely I should be getting in your pouch.
I guess kangaroos get in each other's pouches. No,
that would be baby kangaroos. That's him assuming that the guy he was trying to get into was also a kangaroo.
Maybe he thought everyone was kangaroos. Maybe he didn't think he was a kangaroo. He thought everybody else was a kangaroo, and he was just trying to play it cool and fit in.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm surrounded by fucking kangaroos. All right, I bounce around a bit, jump in one of their pockets. Nobody will know the difference.
No one will ever know.
I just like the phrase, he got a swift beating. It's so, like, matter of fact. Tried to jump in someone's pocket, got a swift beating, sent him on his way.
End of story.
And, right, our last tale this week comes in from our cousin Louise.
Ah.
So this one is a proper hometown slice of history. So there used to be this cocktail bar in Norwich called Chandler's near John Lewis. Anyone from Norwich? remembers Chandler's or knows where John Lewis is. You already have a leg up on the average listener on this story.
Paint the picture.
It was my group of friends' go-to. There was a gap in the bar, and in the middle of this gap sat an old dentist chair. If it was a birthday or hen do, you were put in the dentist chair, and then young hot barmen would shake their cocktail shakers, obviously means cocks.
Their penises.
They're junk. They're big cock and balls in your face. Would shake their cocktail shakers and straddle either side of the bar and pour cocktails into the victim of the chair. This is not the most abnormal thing I've ever heard.
It's also what makes me laugh is, isn't John Lewis down the road from where you and I go to the dentist?
It is! Oh my god, yeah, that is where our dentist in Norwich is. It's just near John Lewis. Oh my god, we should have gone after dark, man.
Yeah.
that place sounds crazy. I wonder what you get if you're a bloke. Do you still get some guy's dick and balls?
No, you get an actual checkup.
If you're a bloke, then we'll do a quick filling, put a crown in. Happy birthday, mate. Congratulations. Anyway, one evening, we're sipping margaritas, watching the latest shenanigans unfold in the dentist chair. The barman has just mounted the girl when the very giggly, very shit-faced girl in the chair flails her arms about in excitement, catching the lever that reclines the chair, throwing her backwards, her legs fly up into the delicate undercarriage of the barman, who collapses on top of her, grabbing his crown jewels in pain. So she just booted him in the ghoulies.
In his bare penis. It is exposed penis.
Immediately, as a bartender, you go from feeling like the coolest guy who ever lived to an absolute twat.
That's a man that will never get his cock out ever again.
He will think twice. And next time someone does the dentist chair.
What are they doing leaving the lever open?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, don't touch that. If you touch that, the chair's going to wildly fly back.
It's going to throw you back so hard that your legs are going to...
Oh, dear. Meanwhile, we're not done. Bartender getting booed in the nuts is just the start.
That's just the amuse-bouche.
Meanwhile, another member of the hen party leaps up from her bar stool, has obviously had a skinful. What a great phrase. You don't hear that very often.
What's had a skinful?
Had a skinful. Like if you're drunk so much, you're not... Did you say of dick?
that's what I thought.
No, it's like when you're drunk, you've had a skinful. The idea is that you're just a skin full of alcohol.
Gotcha, yeah, of course.
Anyway, she's obviously had a skinful. Her legs give way and she hits the floor like a sack of spuds, smashing her face on the bar on the way down. Hysterical. That is already hilarious to me. And someone falls over and catches the bar with their face on the way down. Anyone who knows me knows people hitting their faces, comedy gold for me. Bloodbath, nosebleed. standard with that much alcohol in your system, while we watch on, pissing ourselves, laughing, drinks and a show.
That is a drinks and a show. If she's done her teeth, there's only a dentist down the road.
That sounds like it sounds like that went from being a very fun experience for everyone involved to an absolute nightmare very shortly. And I think the funniest bit for me is that after the guy got kicked in the nuts, then unprompted by anything, a woman just got up and face planted the bar.
I wonder.
Like, oh my god, his nuts!
I wonder if she thought she was gonna help in some way.
I got his balls. Bam!
Jeez.
Oh my god. And that is why, if you go out in Norwich, you take your life in your fucking hands.
Yeah.
To this very day, nothing has changed apart from there's no chanders in.
Yeah, isn't the strip?
Prince of Wales Road, yeah.
Yeah, isn't it?
I believe it's one of the most dangerous club strips in the UK.
I don't see it. I want to.
You haven't seen the fucking animals walking up and down that street?
Yeah, but I don't.
I don't mean literal animals. It's not like a tiger that walks.
I haven't. You know, it's no different to anywhere else, I don't think, really.
I don't know. I think that the issue for Norwich is that pretty much all of the clubs are on that strip.
Mm.
There's a few little ones dotted around, but if you include Tombland and Prince of Wales as one long strip, that's pretty much all of the big late night drinking places are all in one place.
I don't see how it makes it dangerous, though.
It's because you've got that many people all packed around.
I think it's a weird that it's on the list of most dangerous places to go drinking.
It's definitely more dangerous places to go drinking. Side of a volcano, for example.
No, but I reckon anywhere up north is probably quite dangerous.
Yeah, true. Nottingham can't be great. Isn't gun crime high in Nottingham? How have we got onto this?
I mean, Nottingham's just another Norwich, really.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But at least they had like Robin Hood and stuff.
Because if you went to college in Norfolk, you probably ended up at uni in Nottingham. And I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for that. And I don't care. It's a fucking fact. Everybody that didn't go to Nottingham Uni from Norfolk looks at everybody at Nottingham Uni and goes, everyone from Norfolk just went to Nottingham Uni. And everybody who went to Nottingham Uni is like, I don't care.
You see, in my year, it was Bath. Bath was the place. I was amazed how many people I went to college with were at Bath's Bar.
Really?
Yeah, loads.
Class of whatever year it was from Bastion College, pretty much all went. I know about 20 people that went to Nottingham University.
Oh, there you go. Well, That is Tales from Behind the Bar.
Tales from Behind the Bar.
Which leads us on to our next segment, which is the all-new quiz game devised by Guy himself. Guy, do you want to tell us a little bit about this game you've devised, and then I will give us a little audio cue.
Well, this game is called Booze or Ruse, where people have to guess if the drink is real or the drink is fake.
And I think that sounds pretty straightforward.
And our first contestant is my co-presenter himself, Alex Alzado.
All right, fantastic. Well, let's get started with this week's edition of Booze or Ruse. Big thanks to Josh at the Media Music Podcast for that jingle that we use all too rarely.
Well, welcome to Booze or Ruse. We have Alex on the show. Alex, where are you from?
From Hevingham, Norfolk, but I live in Bath.
Sorry?
From Bath.
I heard you. I'm just sorry.
Ah.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it like that.
No? All right,
maybe. Okay, so booze or rude. So I'm going to read you out a list. It's quite a long list of a mixture of real and fake alcoholic drinks. And I just want you to say if they are real or fake.
All right, bring it on.
Okay, here we go. So, straight off the bat, baby mouse wine.
Baby mouse wine. I'm going to say that's a real drink with a dead baby mouse in it.
You are absolutely correct. It is a real drink. It is a Chinese health drink, and it is brewed by drowning alive baby mice, maximum 3 days old.
Oh!
If the mouse is four, we don't want to know about it.
He lives.
In rice moonshine, and then letting them ferment in a bottle for about a year.
So, oh my god!
So technically, when you drink it, they're 4 years old. According to local Chinese belief, mouse wine is a cure to just about any illness imaginable, including asthma and liver problems, among others.
That's truly horrible.
But you were correct, so that's 1 point. Next up, pizza beer.
Ooh, I think that this is a real drink again, and it's designed to be drunk with pizza.
You are correct. It's from Tom and Athena Seaforth. In 2006, they wanted to create a beer that would pair with our favourite food. Pizza beer was born. They've gone commercial, chopping hundreds of pounds of wheat crust, garlic, oregano, tomato, basil for their malty concoction.
Ooh.
So it is a real
I beer. Would be tempted to try that.
Hmm.
Not as my go-to drink, but
it has the soupçon of the essence of pizza, is what they're saying there. All right, number three, donkey liqueur.
I'm going to say this is a ruse.
You think ruse?
I think ruse.
Correct, it is a ruse. There is no such thing as donkey liqueur.
Donkey liqueur.
Squirrel beer.
No, it can't be. Ruse. Got to be ruse, right?
It's real.
It's real squirrel beer.
And you'll never guess who it's from.
Who's it from?
Brewdog.
Brewdog. Of course it's from Brewdog. Those fucking crazy bastards.
Got the title of the world's strongest beer. They've now upped their game with a new brew that is 55% alcohol. And it carries a generous $765 price tag. It's called The End of History, and the bottles come in stuffed animals, like animals that were once alive. The 12 bottles have been made featuring 7 dead stoats, 4 squirrels, and 1 rabbit. James Watt, one of the two guys behind Brewdog, put it better than we ever could. When he said, "The impact of The End of History is a perfect conceptual marriage between taxidermy, art, craft, brewing. Just like we've all been waiting for, those interested in the actual beer, it's a blonde Belgian ale with touches of nettles and juniper berries. And in order to achieve the brain-blasting alcohol content, it had to be created using extreme freezing techniques."
Brewdog, if you're listening, you guys are fucking crazy. Like, at a certain point, just come on now.
You got
bring it taxidermy. You're drinking a beer one day and you're like, we need to get taxi to... Anyway, just chill out a little bit. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's awesome. Okay. Scottish salmon cask whiskey.
Scottish salmon cask whiskey. Scottish salmon cask whiskey.
A whiskey that has been...
matured in a Scottish salmon cask. I don't know what a salmon cask is, but I'm going to say it's a real alcohol.
Fake.
Ah, no! No!
As far as I know, there is nothing that exists such as a Scottish salmon cask whiskey.
No. Do I lose a point for that?
No. All
right.
You just don't get anything.
Okay, lovely.
Okay, next up. Platinum and white gold tequila.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely the sort of thing people will buy.
$225,000. It was sold recently. Not recently. 2006, if you can call that recently. To a private collector in Mexico City. The cure was made out of 100% blue agave liquid. and was aged for 6 years. I don't know what that means. What is a blue agave liquid?
So agave is the plant. It's agave, like a cactus-style plant that you make tequila from. It kind of looks a bit like aloe vera.
Okay.
Instead of getting aloe vera from it, you get agave, which you can buy as low-calorie syrup, or you can use it because it's nice and sugary to convert into alcohol.
Ah, I see. Snake wine is next. Snake wine.
Yes, 100% true. Got to be. Snake wine, probably a venomous snake.
Absolutely correct. Includes a venomous snake inside the bottle. It's originated in Vietnam and can be found around Southeast Asia. The snakes, preferably venomous ones, are not usually preserved for their meat, but to have the snake poison dissolved in the liquor. However, the snake venom is denatured by the ethanol. Its proteins are unfolded and therefore inactivated. So you can drink it and you won't have
won't
to
die from snake
you
poison.
You won't someone die.
Sense.
Asbestos stout.
No. No, no way. Surely not. No. Final answer.
Final answer?
Can't be. Yeah.
No, of course there's no such thing as asbestos.
Like, surely not.
Bacon vodka.
Yes.
Yes.
I've had it. I had it in a Bloody Mary. It was delicious.
Did you?
Mm.
It's an unusual premium spirit, but it's got a familiar flavour, as you'd imagine. Bacon is the only vodka on the market that Bacon is the brand. So Bacon spelt with a K, not a C. It's the only vodka on the market that captures the meaty, peppery flavour of just cooked bacon while maintaining crisp, clean profile. Perfect for making rich Bloody Mary. It also begs for experimentation with creative mixology. So
yeah, why not? If knock yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely. Polka.
Say again, sorry?
Polka.
Are you saying polka?
P-U-L-Q-U-E. Polka.
Ah, why do I feel like this is a trap? Would you have made this up? I'm going to feel like a dick if I say it's true and it's not true. I'm going to go not true just to be on the safe side. I don't think it's true.
It's real. It's real. Polka.
What is it?
Or Octli. I'm so sorry. If someone's listening to this and they know what this drink is and I'm pronouncing it wrong, I do apologise. It's a milk-coloured, somewhat vicious alcoholic beverage made from the fermented sap of the maguey plant. If there's someone from Mexico listening, they must want to kill me because I can't be pronouncing anything right. It's a traditional native beverage of Mexico. The drink's history extends far back into the Mesoamerican period. I didn't get that right either, did I? God, this is a hard one. When it was considered sacred, and its use was limited to certain classes of people. After the Spanish conquest of Mexico, the drink became secular, and its consumption rose. Three lizard liqueur.
Three lizard liqueur? I'm in. If there's snake vodka, there's got to be three lizard liqueur, right?
Absolutely.
Same job, lizards dissolved in.
Yep. I mean, you thought one snake in a bottle might be strange. Try three lizards. It's commonly made in Chinese and Vietnamese villages. You see lizards, particularly geckos. They're believed to have a powerful energy. So theoretically, the more geckos you stuff inside the bottle, the more energy you can absorb while getting drunk.
Just ramming geckos in there.
I mean, why stop at three?
We need more geckos.
Okay, you got four left.
All right, bring them on.
Duck feather gin.
Duck feather gin? It sounds like the sort of strangely posh thing that the average gin drinker would love. So I'm going to say it's a real alcohol.
No.
Ah!
It's fake.
Ah! Of course it is. Duck feather gin. All right. Fuck!
Chocolate donut stout.
Yes, 100%. Dessert stouts are huge.
Yes. Can I?
I think I have given you enough bizarre dessert flavoured stouts over
yeah,
the years.
Yeah, I've been meaning to speak to you about that.
That's actually why I invented Booze or Ruse. Let me guess, you want me to stop buying you them?
Yeah, they're not nice. I'm really sorry. I've got the last one you gave me, I've still got a can of the Biscoff.
Yeah.
I don't want to drink it.
Really? Have they all been awful?
They've all been terrible.
Oh no.
I'm sorry.
All right, no more dessert-flavored stouts.
I appreciate you getting them for me, but please never do it again.
please stop.
But yes, of course, chocolate donut stout. Chocolate-flavored beer, very common. Sapporo, the Japanese beer company, brewed its chocolate brewery with real Royce chocolates, but the Shenandoah Brewing Company, they don't make this easy, have taken it one step further with chocolate donut stout. This is a double chocolate stout made using chocolate malt and actual chocolate with essence of donut added by a top secret method. And I will say now, confidently, if you think that sounds nice, it probably isn't. So I wouldn't waste your time. Okay, here we go. Yogurito.
True.
Yes.
Something to do with live yogurt cultures.
This tangy yogurt-based liqueur may be made in Holland and bottled in France, but its target market is strictly Japan. Drunk straight or mixed with orange or pineapple juice, the creamy, fruity, sweet combo is especially popular among the health conscious. But when asked about the calcium content of Yogurito, a Suntory representative remarked, "Yogurito is made from yogurt and tastes like yogurt, but it's not yogurt. We cannot say that it's healthy."
Ah! It's made from yogurt, it tastes like yogurt, but it's not yogurt, and seriously, it's really bad.
Yeah, please don't eat it. All right, last one. Here we go. Cadbury's Cream Egg Single Malt.
Oh, no, that sounds real. This definitely sounds like something. I don't know. I don't know if single malt brands go in for Cadbury stuff. I feel like they always do something fancy. But then there's... I've had Jaffa Cake single malt and stuff like that. Oh, God. I'm going to say not true.
Correct. It's not true. I went for an Easter theme. And that is all of them. I just want to say a big thank you to Oddi.com, which gave me a list of all the real ones there. Would you like to know what you scored?
I'd love to know what I scored.
You got 9 out of 15.
9 out of 15? Is that good? Is that bad?
We don't know.
Yeah, we just have to play again and see what's good and what's bad. But there we go. That was Booze or Ruse. Do we have too many audio stings?
You can never have enough.
All right. Fair enough. Well, unfortunately, that is time at the bar.
It's time for us to finish our drinks and head home.
In the meantime, you can keep up to date with what we're doing on our website, thelastcallpodcast.co.uk, on our Twitter, @lastcall_pod, or by following our Instagram, @lastcall_pod_.
Don't forget to take your glasses back to the bar, and we'll see you guys very soon.